The end of World War I left the British with a large number of destroyers of wildly differing sizes and capabilities, but also a sense that future combat operations were likely to be much further afield than the North Sea. So any new destroyer would need considerably more range, and should ideally be able to build on the capacity of the existing destroyers to establish a new standard type. Everyone agreed that a battery of four single 4.7-inch guns would be preferred, but there was some discussion over torpedo armament. The largest current destroyers had a pair of triple tubes, but whether this should be upgraded to a pair of quadruple tubes or three triple tubes was contentious. Eventually, the crowding issues that would be involved in trying to fit three triple tubes end-to-end meant that the pair of quadruple tubes was accepted, with overall opinion being that such an overall armament could be fitted on a destroyer if the new type was about as large as previous flotilla leaders. In previous classes of destroyer, British practice had been to build one ship per flotilla a little bit larger than the others, usually carrying an extra gun, as well as the additional accommodation necessary for the staff and officers to lead a flotilla. There was a bit of pushback, though, with some arguing for a split between fleet and escort destroyers, while others insisted on using the 4-inch gun instead of the 4.7-inch, for various reasons, including, rather interestingly, for 1919, better anti-aircraft elevation, as well as rate of fire, which it was felt would be handy in a melee. However, the overall greater stopping power of the 4.7-inch gun, which, especially with new shells then being developed, meant that it could even punch through the belts of less well-protected cruisers, eventually won the argument in favour of the heavier gun. This, in turn, led to the development of HMS Amazon and HMS Ambushcade, prototype ships that embodied much of this thinking. But, after carefully noting these ships' strengths and weaknesses, it was time to consider ordering a new class. This started in mid-1926, with an aim to get the first ships laid down in about a year's time. The Royal Navy's needs were mostly allowed to set the overall size of the ship, although some resented the idea of larger and therefore more expensive ships being built, as it was felt that these might not provide the numbers needed, but others concluding that a larger vessel was needed if you wanted to accomplish the Royal Navy's goals, and that view won out. The primary issue was range. Rather than a simple absolute range figure at cruising speed, the range that was quoted was for a certain time period to be spent at 16 knots, which was slightly above average economical cruising speed, but around about fleet cruising speed if combat was thought to be inevitable, with some additional steam in the boilers ready for quick acceleration, plus an additional period of time operating at two-thirds power. This was eventually worked out to a specification of 1,500 nautical miles at 16 knots, followed by 12 hours spent at two-thirds power, with absolute range obviously increasing as overall speed decreased. The two-thirds power being thought to be a handy average reflecting the full power and lower power speeds that a destroyer might be called on over 12 hours of battle. That this figure almost perfectly matched the required range and speed needed to escort a fleet sailing from Singapore to roughly where you might expect to come across an Imperial Japanese Navy on the offensive, plus obviously time for combat and fuel to get home, was not exactly a coincidence. Overall armament settled at four single 4.7-inch guns with a superfiring pair forward and another pair aft, two quadruple torpedo tubes amidships on the centre line, and either two quadruple 50 caliber anti-aircraft machine guns or a pair of pom-poms for anti-aircraft work. These could be interchangeable, plus some mounting points for some Lewis machine guns. Initial attempts to increase the elevation of the 4.7-inch guns to allow for better anti-aircraft work were eventually rejected on the grounds of complexity and weight, but significant provision for depth charges, mine-laying equipment, and a high-speed minesweeping device known as the Two-Speed Destroyer Sweep, or TSDS, were all included. Also included was provision and space for ASDIC, what we would call sonar these days, with 34,000 shaft horsepower driving two screws for a top speed of 35 knots on a standard displacement of about 1,350 tons, although many ships would go a little bit faster than this on trials. This design would be designated the A, or Acasta class, and 8 ships would be ordered, plus a larger flotilla leader, the Codrington, which had a 5th gun amidships between the 2 funnels. 2 very similar vessels would also be built for the Royal Canadian Navy, the Saguenay, possibly, and Skeena, with minor changes made on those ships to match the Royal Canadian Navy's requirements. Another 8 vessels would be ordered to a near identical design as the B or Beagle class, plus another flotilla leader, the Keith, although in that case, Keith was visually almost identical to the ships that she was to lead, only displacing a fraction more due to having a slightly expanded quarters for the necessary additional officers, but no additional armament. The main difference between the 2 flotillas was that the A class were fitted with the TSDS and the B class were fitted with ASDIC. Although in the following decade, the A-class would have ASDIC installed in the pre-reserved spaces anyway. Laid down in 1928 and 29, commissioned in 1930 and 31, the A and B-class were, by the time of World War II, the oldest modern destroyer flotillas in the Royal Navy, and would see considerable modification as the war progressed. Initially, one set of torpedo tubes was replaced with a 3-inch anti-aircraft gun. Then the addition of radar, more anti-submarine equipment, and light anti-aircraft weapons began to encroach on the main armament, with even more such equipment being installed late in the war, as they were moved over to primarily escort duties as newer and larger ships came online. By the end of the war, some ships were down to just 2 main guns and a single quadruple torpedo launcher, having had the aftmost gun replaced by more anti-submarine weapons and one of the forward guns replaced by a Hedgehog launcher. Half of the 20 ships built in this associated family would be lost to enemy action, most in the opening couple of years of the war. 1939 saw a mine claim HMS Blanche, while 1940 saw Brazen and Codrington sunk by German aircraft, Acheron lost to a mine, Acasta and Ardent going down trying to protect HMS Glorious from the Scharnhorsts, and Keith and Basilisk being lost during the Dunkirk evacuation. After around 2 years without any further losses, Achates would be sunk by the cruiser Admiral Hipper at the Battle of Barents Sea at the end of 1942, and Boadicea would be sunk by aircraft in 1944. 3 other ships would be written off to other factors. Arrow was caught in an explosion of an ammunition ship in summer of 1943 and considered uneconomical to repair, while the Skeena was driven ashore while anchored off Iceland by a storm, and Saguenay was accidentally rammed by a freighter that she was escorting in late 1942, which set off her depth charges, blowing off her stern and causing her to be turned into a training ship. All the surviving ships were considered to be far too small to be of any further use post-war, and they were rapidly scrapped, except for the Boreas, which had been lent to the Greek Navy late in the war, and survived serving with them as the Salamis until the early 1950s. When she was replaced by ex-US Navy Fletchers and returned to be broken up in 1952.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.